Hey everyone, it's Shannon. Before we get into the episode, I just wanted to give you a quick content warning for some of our discussion topics for this episode. We do talk a bit about abuse, manipulation, gaslighting, suicide attempts, and some other possibly real life uncomfortable topics that could in fact actually be triggering to some of our listeners. We want to make sure that our listeners know ahead of time what they could possibly hear, and they can make the choice whether to listen to the episode or avoid something that could possibly harm them. So just know that as these issues come up throughout the season, you will hear this recording or different versions of this recording at the beginning of our episodes just to help out our fellow Firehawks and listeners avoid things that could hurt them. With all that in mind, thank you for listening and enjoy the episode.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Type Beam, our third episode in this marathon of recording to cover the first three episodes released on week one of The Expanse season five. And it's a big episode, but before we get to that, let's talk with our host for a minute. As always, I am joined by Fred and Andrea. Hello, Fred and Andrea.
Why, hello.
Hello.
How are you doing today, Andrea? What are you working on?
I am actually not painting my nails today.
Are you coloring?
Yes, I got a beautiful watercoloring book from Fred. Ooh. And I'm just putting it to good use.
Yeah, I love coloring books. I have too many coloring books. And speaking of Fred, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. It is what we're recording on the 20th.
Yes.
And we did our Christmas on the 18th because COVID, and we started our vacation on the 18th. So why not? Let's enjoy this brand new Xbox for 2 weeks instead of one.
There you go. That's the spirit.
So fantastic.
That is the spirit. So as I just mentioned, the first three episodes of The Expanse are now live. This is our last episode of coverage from those first three episodes, which means I'll be sharing this on the subreddit very soon. Very, very soon. We're going to have two episodes coming out this week. Technically three, because episode two was released today. So it's a big week at the Type Beam. A very big, busy week.
It's Christmas!
And yay. It's Christmas! But we'll wish everyone a happy holidays in our Christmas episode that we're recording tomorrow.
We are busy for you people.
We are working ourselves to the bone. Andrea's coloring.
I know what the elves feel like in the North Pole.
It's cold.
Yep.
And speaking of cold, let's get right in the episode. It's going somewhere. I promise. So today we are talking about The Expanse season 5, episode 3, Mother. Now, just to be safe, I looked up the dictionary definition of mother. just to be safe, I wasn't going case? To. Just in case.
Was it different than what you thought?
No.
Okay, good.
I was curious to see what dictionary.com was going to say, you know, if I looked up the word mother, and it's not that I was disappointed, but I pretty much got what I expected. So the first noun definition of mother is a female parent. Wow. Mind-boggling.
I did not know that one.
Yeah, right? Isn't that weird? Well, that's because you have a different word for mother.
Mama.
Well, yeah, and madre.
Madre, yes.
Yeah. So that's the noun definition. And the verb definition is to be the mother of, which is to use the word in the actual definition, or to give origin or rise to.
And I love that one.
Isn't that a good one? We thought that one was cool, so we put that one in the notes. And it is relevant to this episode, and we're going to get into that. There's a couple of characters who kind of have either are mothers or act as mothers of a sort in this episode. The first, and I think the titular mother, is Naomi. This is the first time she's reunited with her son since she left him with his father when she fled her situation, as we've seen in previous, as we've seen her talk about in previous seasons. We also have Avasarala, who, yes, is a literal mother, but she is acting as the mother of Earth, trying to act in its best interest, even as those she is being the mother to fight against that, Gao and the rest of the UM. I would even say Oksana, because she does try and got. First of all, they said on Twitter this week that Oksana is the matriarch of Drummer's crew. She is like their mother figure. She's the one that they look to for like that emotional support that's expected of a mother, of a matriarch. She's seen as like their exo second leader. And there's even a scene in the episode where Drummer does something, and when she leaves, everyone looks at Oksana, which I thought was very funny. But she has a moment where she helps Drummer through her emotions about something, which is something that we usually expect mothers to do. Mm-hmm. And then there is, of course, the mother of all attacks, the beginning of the mother of all attacks, which... I can't wait to talk about that, but we're saving that for the end.
There's a special bomb that's really close to that one, which is very reminiscent of what one of these rocks is doing, and that's a Moab, Mother of All Bombs,
yeah,
which is like the biggest non-nuclear weapon there is.
Yep.
And I think you're missing another big mother here that is really, really important.
Who?
Earth. Mother Earth.
Yes, Mother Earth.
So the cradle of life for the galaxy. So
yeah. The breadbasket. I would also argue that Holden is a mother because he tries to complain to management about security.
Oh, he's a Karen.
He's a Karen.
There's actually, like, when we get to the Tycho storyline, I have a funny note that I put in about Holden. But yeah, he's a little bit of a Karen in this episode. So yeah, lots of like mothers. And is there any other? I know Fred just gave a little bit of thoughts. But do you guys have any thoughts of the idea of like motherhood that is seen in this episode or anything like that?
I think it's really fitting for the episode that we get. I'll save that until we start breaking that down.
Okay.
Yep, I have nothing else to say about the title.
Okay. Then let's get into it. It's once again, this episode is written by Dan. No, I want to say it's Novak. Usually when I see that name, it's pronounced Novak. If I'm wrong, Daniel, please write to me and let me know. I do not want to mispronounce your name every time you write an episode.
It was just written by Dan.
Just written by Dan. We love Dan here. He writes great episodes.
Let's make it casual. Yeah. He's our friend. We drink coffee with him.
He writes great episodes.
He does.
And this episode was directed by guest director Thomas Jane.
Which I love.
That, yeah. Nice shout out.
Yeah. He did a great job. I have some feelings about him, but I'm not going to get into on this podcast. But I think he directs a hell of an episode. He's a very good episode. So. All right. In brief, this is the summary of Mother. In brief. Drummer salvages Ashford's ship and discovers his last broadcast. She plans to hunt down Marco. I put the wrong name there. She plans to hunt down... No, I put Ashford.
Oh, no!
Oh, no!
Hunt down his ghost. He is the ghost knife of Callisto. He's out there. He's Casper. she plans to hunt down Marco until she's talked down and tells Fred instead. Holden, Fred, and Bull investigate Monica's kidnapping. Naomi arrives at Palace to old friends and her son, Philip. Bobby and Alex try to get information out of Savitaire's aide, but find themselves manipulated. Avasarala tries to figure out what Marco is planning and how to prevent it. Book readers, I'm not going to tell you what it is because I'm not spoiling anybody, but multiple people on Twitter have discovered a very cool Easter egg for the books in the title sequence. Again, reminding people why it's important to keep a close eye on those title sequences, especially after tonight's episode. After tonight's episode is when those details really start to change. So make sure for when you start watching episode 4, watch that title sequence very carefully, especially if you are a book reader. And let's begin the breakdown. All right.
Oh, dear. Oh, gosh. You went there.
We're going to start with the DeWalt crew. Drummer and her crew board and salvage Claes Ashford's ship. Drummer finds the recording that Ashford took moments before his death, in which Inaros Marco described his plan to go after targets bigger than Tycho or Ceres. She announces to her crew that she plans to find and attack Marco. Oksana finds her later and tells her that there are better ways to grieve Ashford's death than to look for violence. Sneaking out after the two spend the night together, Drummer sends the recording she found in Ashford's ship to Fred and tells him that, though she hopes the information can help Belters, this is not her fight.
I absolutely love Drummer's storyline in this one. You, like, Kara has done a phenomenal job at showing us that loss, showing us that sadness. And I find it extremely beautiful. The scene where she is back in her ship and Oksana comes to comfort her and she's in tears and she says, "Please don't leave me." I teared up. I thought it was so beautiful because there are always those moments where we face things and we try to do it by ourselves and like it just comes to a point where you can't. And I think that Drummer throughout this whole entire thing has been suffering in silence. Yes, everybody knows how much Ashford meant to her, but she never opened up about it. And I think that that's what she gets with this crew, that she is able to confide in them. I thought it was truly beautiful.
I think Drummer's like role or position as the leader of this faction makes her very strong, and she guards herself and doesn't let anyone in, and she tries to own it all. She doesn't let anybody see her weakness, and I think she's starting to realize that she can't continue the way that she is, or she's going to basically kill herself, either from the emotion or from the bottle, one of the two. So I think this is where Drummer finally reaches out to her family, the best support that she has. And we see that emotion played out so brilliantly in Kara's job.
There's this interesting, like, physical moment. So Drummer's having all these emotions about Ashford, and she wants to chase after Marco to get revenge. She says it's not about revenge, but we all know deep down it is about revenge. And, you know, she's sitting in the bridge of the Tynan, and she's emotional. She's holding the bottle. And when Oksana makes herself known, Drummer turns the chair away from her. And Drummer, she doesn't. She's always gone to show us that she doesn't like showing emotion. She doesn't like showing anything she perceives as weakness. Even as early as season two, she's shown that she's like this. And there's a line in that scene where Oksana says to her, let me see if I have the exact lines. Like, that was one of the things I really liked that I wanted to remember. So she tells her, "Your pain is bringing you back to who you were before, looking for violence, but there are better ways to grieve." So this, there's, with this little line, we find out, and we kind of saw hints of it in the second episode when she was with the, her crew, that Drummer is not the Drummer we know when she's with her crew. And we already got that vibe. Like, should we see her laughing, having fun? Her you know, Oksana feeds her a bite of food and she takes it no problem. Like, they have a really relaxed relationship. We usually don't see Drummer relaxed like this. And so this line is so important because Drummer has allowed herself to finally relax with a family, something we've never seen her with before. Maybe she considered Naomi family for a time, someone she could relax in front of. But then Naomi went back to her family and she shut down again. Mm-hmm. So she's relaxing in front of her family, and Oksana can see her going back to the Drummer we know, the one who does react with violence, like when she shot those guys who shot her in season two.
Right.
You know, when she was going to space that guy for putting people in danger on the behemoth. Like her anger manifests in violence. And so we have her going back to that Drummer that we know. And Oksana talks her down because that is the Drummer, the Kamina Drummer that they know is a more relaxed, loving, friendly person who cares about her family above anything else. And the second she starts to go back to her old ways, Oksana manages to pull her back to the point where she does decide, you know what? This isn't my fight. I'm going to give the information to Fred. And he can get it to the people who can do something, because this is my family and I care more about them than I do about this fight. It's a very big moment for her.
And I think that that line spoken by Oksana is very relevant to other characters in the show. We can see it in Amos, that before it was normally like shoot first, ask questions later, but he is much more calculative in the way that he does things now. And it's because he has something to fight for. And I think Drummer does too. Like, before it was like the same thing. She was trigger happy, and if she had to do something, she would do it. But now she has a family to look after. So I really appreciate that.
There was something I said before recording. I thought was very interesting. So the writers were tweeting about answering questions about the Polyam fam. The Polyam Belter fam, as they're known on Twitter. By the way, please follow all of them. They are so cute on Twitter. Like Kara, and I don't know how to pronounce his name, but he plays the Belter who was like lying on his back fixing the panel when she comes in their first scene. He was tweeting about like one of the other ones being hot, and she was like, yeah, but I'm like the hottest, right? And like things like that. So they're so cute on Twitter.
They are.
And they love working together. They created the hashtag Polyam Belter fam. It's just really nice. But when Drummer leaves after telling them we're going for that bounty, we're gonna go kill Marco, blah blah blah, soon as she leaves, everyone turns to look at Oksana, and it's an interesting moment because the writers revealed that they said this on Twitter, probably because it's not something that's said in the show, that Drummer actually came to them. Like, this isn't a family Drummer formed, it's a family that Drummer ended up with, and that Oksana is actually the matriarch. She's considered the head of the family. Even if Drummer is the captain, Oksana is the actual like familial leader of the family. She's the one they turn to for advice. She's the one they turn to when it looks like their captain may be going over the edge. It's just a really funny shot how they all like all their heads turn and they look at Oksana.
Ty and Daniel have tweeted that this is the best family they have ever created.
Yeah, it's a great family.
Yeah.
And I there's so much more to talk about further in about the whole family dynamic that I'll wait to get to till it actually like arrives, because it hasn't really happened yet. But I do really like how they'll meet in the galley and have these family talks.
Yeah.
Like that we saw one kind of, but it was also dinner time, but we saw one in the previous episode, and now we have this one where like they convene in the one galley of the DeWalt and they talk about their plan. I love how he calls the one member of the family calls them a small armada. Like, I just, right. I just love them so much. They just bring me so much joy. And, like, I knew they were going to come in eventually, but something, they're just so special. There's something about them that jumps off the screen a little more than the page. I just love them so much.
Yeah, I think that they have really done a good job at showcasing that family dynamic. And the, sometimes they will not agree, and sometimes there will be problems, but they're still that family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any other lingering thoughts on the scenes from the DeWalt crew?
I'm still very nervous for Drummer. I think that she will try her best to make the family happy mm-hmm. and be there for them. But I think that anger and resentment for Marco is going to get her killed. And I've said that before.
I think she's going to come to odds. Between being the leader of this faction and being the leader or a member of this family. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to come to odds, and she's going to have to sort out what is more important for her, mm-hmm. to give up the chase for Marco and go with the family, or to leave the family and go after Marco.
Yeah.
I will Which say... is sad. Mm-hmm. Because in one way or another, she's betraying. Or she will see it as a betrayal of somebody that she truly loved, mm-hmm. whether it's her family or Ashford.
Mm. And there's, like, that, speaking of Ashford, that scene where she finds his message and she's just the shot of her listening to it, as, like, listening to him sing, that was a lot.
It was very sad.
That was very sad. There's, it's, you know, the fact that, and the fact that at the end of this, you know, after she sends the message to Fred and she goes to, she opens the bottle and then closes it again and decides not to have any of it. It's, there's just a lot to unpack with Drummer and her emotional journey and this journey of, like, getting justice for Ashford. Yeah. It's just very, very good. I'm very proud of her. I'm glad she's found a family. That loves her, like for example, like the family that Naomi had as well, that Naomi left Drummer for back in season 3. Yeah. You know, how Drummer was trying to wrap her head around why she would leave the belt, and that's because that's her family. And now Drummer is finally experiencing that for herself. Do I fight for the belt, or do I fight for my family?
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, it's really, I'm glad that she has this moment now to kind of understand that. So. All right. Well, speaking of Naomi, let's talk about the other big, one of the other big storylines. So we have two main storylines in this episode, and one of them is Palace. So Naomi arrives on Palace Station, where she reconnects with Belter friends Sin and Kral. Sin is happier to see her than Kral. She asks them to tell She asks them to tell Philip that she has arrived in hopes of seeing him. Her meeting with Philip goes badly, as he is angry at her for abandoning him. She tells him she brought him a ship, and he can take it and go where he likes, but he indicates that he won't. As she starts to contact Holden, Naomi is ambushed by Sin, Kral, and Philip, who plan to take the ship to return to Marco's fleet. Kral attacks her with a stun device, and Philip orders them to bring her with them, which they do.
No, Philip had the stun device.
No, Kral did.
Didn't she get hit twice? One by Philip and one by Kral?
Yeah, I didn't see Philip hit her. I only saw Kral hit her.
No, he got her first.
All right, hold on. Let me do it again.
No, that's fine.
That's fine.
Philip attacks her with a stun device.
Jesus!
And then Kral attacks her with a stun device. And Philip orders them to bring her with them, which they do. To be fair, there's a lot going on in that scene.
It's double or nothing. That's all. Together.
They're all so close together. I can't tell what's going on. And she's all twisting around the whole time.
Well, this is why you have us.
That whole bit's getting left in, by the way. I'm not, like, editing the fact that I said it. It's staying in.
You're not perfect.
No.
When you've watched this, like, 18 more times, you'll have it memorized. Don't worry.
Well, part of it is, too, I was taking notes. So sometimes I look away and I miss little details like who shocks her first, but all I hear is her screaming and Coral is just standing there.
Fair enough.
It's like when you play Among Us and like the wrong person stands near the body and it's like, well, you're sus.
Yep. Coral is sus. I had conflicting feelings about her storyline in Palace. It was very interesting. Like, you see the pain that she's going through. Like, she doesn't want to win her son back. She just wants him to be safe. And it's very interesting that the first interaction that she has with him, he just walks away from her, and it's mm-hmm. just so sad. Like, she doesn't, and it's very interesting. Did he know to meet her, or did she just run into him? Did Sin tell him to
go? Yeah, I think it's implied.
I'm sure it was
Sin,
planned. Yeah.
Yeah, that Sin told him because Coral didn't want to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I find it so sad. It's not my favorite scenes or moments. Because they are so painful, and mm-hmm. you see the desperation in Naomi's voice, and then just Naomi's actions, that all she wants to do is get her son to safety.
Mm-hmm. You can tell right from the get-go that Naomi is not comfortable being there on Palace. It reminds mm-hmm. her, you can see in her face, it reminds her of her old life, and yeah. she has completely changed, and this does not fit her anymore, and you see that play out when the other Belter there steals her drink, and mm-hmm. he's like, well, I'll buy you a round. Well, you owe me 100. Well, that's all I'm worth is a drink.
Yeah.
Mm. And, yeah, you could just tell that Naomi is really struggling to even be there.
Yeah.
And then you see, like, right off the bat, you see her and Sin, like, hit it off. Like, it's like they're old friends.
That made me sad. Because you know that there's history there. And if you go, like, if you're in a toxic relationship and there's other people there that kind of, like, made it seem a little bit better, and then you run into them, like, it must be so painful for her because she cares about Sin.
Mm-hmm.
But he's tied to Margo, and that's mm-hmm. painful.
Yeah. It seems like Sin was her... Marco, like her Marco's best friend, if you know what I mean. Like, it's great that they're catching up, but it brings back that whole flood of emotion yeah. of her old life.
It seems like he was kind of a mentor figure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Like an older
like
brother,
a big brother
or
yeah.
Yeah.
Especially like the way he welcomed her back.
Yeah.
Like, he was so happy to see her. And I'm sure that was a huge relief to her as well, because this is a big leap of faith she's taking here.
Yeah. And well, especially when Coral is so ice cold towards
yeah.
her.
And I think that's the, if you were to leave a relationship like that and all the friends that you had, and then you come back, I think that's really natural. Like, some friends will just accept you like you had never left.
Yeah.
And there's that great catching up and drinks and let's yeah. just, we're good. And then there's the other ones that are angry that you left. Mm-hmm. So it's really neat that we get to see that play out from both points of view.
I think part of that probably is that, you know, you always have somebody who kind of sees your side in a situation. And
yeah.
maybe they don't side with you in the end because of choices you made or something like that, but they still understand you. And then there's the people who are only going to see the side of the other person, and they're going to
yeah.
take that person's side. And Sin is very clearly, from the get-go, someone who loved Naomi enough to understand maybe why she did something, mm-hmm. even if he didn't like it, even if he wouldn't go with her, you know? So he's happy to see her because he's happy to know she's alive, she's thriving, because he did care about her, whereas Coral probably sees her leaving as a betrayal.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, something she did out of self-preservation. Because some people are going to be like, well, he was good to you. Like, in any actual real-life abusive situation, there's always going to be people who take the abuser side for one reason or another, either because they love them more, because they have a deeper connection to them more, or because they can't see through the lies.
Yeah, or they never realistic. Saw. They never saw what Naomi saw.
Right. Or like they Marco's didn't have to very be put through what Naomi was put through.
Marco's really good at manipulating and keeping things private. So if he were to abuse Naomi mentally, he's probably not going to be doing it in front of everyone.
Right.
It's going to be private.
Yeah. And speaking of that, that's something I thought on rewatch was very interesting about Naomi's scene with Philip. So Naomi talks a lot about, she says, I know how it feels. I know how you feel. I know how it is to be someone who has to live with your father and blah, blah. And I realize in that moment that she thinks Philip sees what she sees. She thinks that Philip, because she is gone and Philip is his son, that like in many situations in real life like hers, that he takes that now out on the son instead of on her, the other target. But as we see, it becomes very clear to her very fast, very, very fast, that Marco has basically influenced his entire belief about her, because he says to her, my father was right about you, about everything he said about you. And I think in that moment, she realizes that Marco, he never knew what Marco was like. Or maybe he did, but he didn't see what she saw. Mm-hmm. Because that's his father. His father loves him, right? Like, it's very clear from that moment that
Philip
doesn't understand what situation he is in.
Philip is still very young.
Yes, and exactly. Philip
has one parent. Mm-hmm. And he loves his father, and his father has raised him. Mm-hmm. Granted, it's not the best way, but he has nothing to compare to. He doesn't know what normal is.
Yep.
But if your father tells you, your mother left you, everything I'm doing is for you, the belt needs this, and this is your future, and I will sacrifice everything for your future, the child will unfortunately understand.
I mean, that's something very interesting you said that I was actually just going to touch on, so I'm glad you mentioned it, is like Philip probably having the idea that Naomi left him, right? Not left his father, left him, left me, she left me. And Naomi says to him, I'll never forgive myself for making the choice I did, but it was never about you. And sometimes when you hear something like that, you think, oh, well, they didn't think of my feelings. But no, what we know Naomi is trying to say is, I never left because of you.
Yeah.
It was, you were never the reason I left. You were never the person I wanted to leave. It was like, she's basically telling him, I left your father, not you.
Yeah.
And like, that's another one of the big emotional beats for me, between Philip making it very clear that his father has twisted the stories about Naomi and why she left to suit what, you know, his purpose.
His narrative,
exactly.
To make himself look like the victim.
And everyone's the hero of their own story, but some people really make themselves the hero of the story. And I think that's something we're going to hear a lot about. Like, I mean, we even got it in the last season. Marco isn't necessarily the hero of his own story. He thinks he's the hero of the story. And a lot of people, like, will think he has a point, and he does. But in his personal life, like, when we're talking simply about his personal life and his personal relationships, the man is not a hero to what he did to his family. And, like, the fact that Naomi gets twisted into this evil, horrible person, you know, when all she wants to do is protect him from the man who hurt her, because she thinks he is being hurt, too. And at this point in the season, we don't know. We don't know anything about their relationship, right? So all we know is what Philip is telling us. But you can tell that Naomi is thinking that Philip is living the kind of life she did. And she finds out very quickly that Philip does not at all see it the way she does.
Yeah.
And that's the tragedy of it.
I find just like the moments with Marco and the moments just with Naomi suffering because of everything that Marco did, extremely triggering.
Yeah.
Like, because I think that in many ways, a lot of us have experienced that gaslighting, that whole entire situation that Fred mentioned about, like, it's our interpretation of how events happened between people.
Right.
So it's just extremely sad because we know Naomi.
Yeah.
And we know Philip is brainwashed, but he doesn't feel it that way. He loves his father.
Yeah. And that's a very realistic thing. That is a thing that happens. And I think what makes it even more, this is part of my stray observation portion that I was going to, but since we're still on the topic of Naomi and abusive situations, the end of this episode is so heartbreaking because you see her, if you watch very carefully, you know, she's clearly waiting for Philip. She comes to the conclusion that he's not coming, and you see her pull up Holden's comms. She is about to call Holden, probably tell him, hey,
coming home.
Didn't work out. I'm coming home. But the second she pulls up his comms, they come in, and the second she realizes that Philip wants to bring her to Marco, she fights.
Yeah.
Like, she does not, she cannot be with Marco yet. She can't do it. Like, we understand that she won't do it, but the second she realizes that this is a reality, that she can't get back to Holden, and that she's going to be taken back to the person who drove her to suicide attempts, she fights with all she can until they knock her out. And it is so hard to watch. It really is.
Let's take you back to that abusive relationship.
Yeah. I know you're trying to get back to your very good, very healthy, very loving boyfriend. But how about no?
Yeah.
It's really upsetting. I mean, on a lighter note, my other stray observation is about Palace, where Naomi grew up. She worked in the refineries on Palace. That's where she met Marco. And everyone on Palace is struggling, is another very important point when we get to Palace. She sees all the Belters lined up at the docks begging for work. She goes to the bar. The bartender recognizes her and offers to buy her drink. And she says, no, I know times are hard here. I want to pay for my drink. The other Belters try to swindle her out of money because she has a lot of money. She's famous. Yeah. And even the cups in the bar are mismatched. Like, we've already seen the effects of the ring gates opening on Mars, and now we're seeing the effect of the ring gates opening on Palace. And people just trying to get off and get work. And seeing Naomi come home and things are so desperate there, and seeing her try to adjust to being back in a Belter culture, and it doesn't really work out for her.
Well, and that can also bring, like, a lot of guilt.
Yeah.
Like, oh, would things have been different if I had stayed?
Yeah.
How is my child faring in these situations?
Yeah.
And it justifies Marco's fight for Philip.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
Can't blame the kid.
Nope. I know a lot of people have strong opinions of Philip. I, for one, am defensive of Philip. His actions, not so much. And we're going to get to that as the season progresses. But Philip is a child.
Yes.
Philip was raised by an abusive, manipulative man who is charismatic, who people love. And so, of course, Philip sees people love him and believes that his cause is just. And he has valid points. And there's actually a really good Twitter thread that I'll happily read quickly through in the next episode, because I think it's more valid to the next episode, about how Marco came to power. And I'll send it to you guys, too. It's fascinating. Ty actually retweeted it. So, of course, Philip is going to see his father as a great man, you know? And I can't, especially knowing who his father is, I can't blame him. He's a child, you know? Yeah. And I know Josiah is not a child, but Philip is a teenager. He is young. He is impressionable.
Yeah.
And we have seen plenty of media where children get manipulated into doing horrible things and come to regret them. Oh, yeah. And so I am going to have a hard, I can't condemn Philip completely. I can condemn his actions. I can't condemn him. So,
yeah.
Any other lingering thoughts on Naomi's storyline before we move on to something a little lighter?
It was a hard one to watch, for sure.
No, let's move on.
Fred's like, I can't. I'm going to cry.
I'm done.
I'm going to cry. All right, let's fly on over to Tycho, one of our other shorter storylines in this episode. On Tycho, Monica shows Holden and Fred a video of an attack on the secret research facility on Ceres in which Cortazar can be identified as he's taken away by the assailants. Sakai, the chief engineer, finds the identities of the people who purchased the shipping container in which Monica was discovered. But when Holden goes to confront them, he finds that they have already been killed. Fred discovers that the ship scheduled to pick up the container in which Monica was hidden will soon arrive at Tycho and decides that they will wait for them to arrive. So it's not a lot of stuff, but there's some juicy stuff in there.
So those, okay, have to shout out back to the last episode. Andrea and I called it. Those two guys that were in the bar that were looking at Monica.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Are the two dead guys that they found.
Listen, here's the thing. Here's part of the thing.
What's the thing? What's the thing? Come on, what's the thing? I didn't want to go
too deep into it and spoil anything for anyone.
Because well, it's not spoils if you, like, are looking.
Well, no. I mean, well, here's the thing. Not everyone's going to watch all three episodes at once and think to look at those two guys deeper for more than a second like I did. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I know the whole point is like, yeah, I know. Every shot's important. But I wasn't going to talk about it in the first episode. Not necessarily just because I didn't notice it, but because if people are spreading these first three episodes out, I don't want to be the one who tells them. That's not going to be me, bro. But yeah, so you guys, I did notice it when I watched it this time. So good. Sometimes I'll notice things the second. I mean, I notice so much on rewatch, and that's why this show is so good, because there's so much value in rewatching. But yeah, I recognize them immediately when I watched episode three again.
And it's very interesting because in this episode, you realize that. How were they killed? Is somebody aware of the situation? Like, is everybody, like, Holden and Fred have leads, and the leads wind up dead. Like, is somebody else infiltrating? So I find that very, very interesting that their only leads, the one light at the end of the tunnel, ends up dead.
Like, is there somebody who's aware of their leads, or is there somebody cleaning up their tracks? There's so many possibilities here.
Yeah. Well, from the kidnapping of Monica to these people dying, and there's probably more going on. Marco definitely has infiltrated Tycho. I'm just not sure how much.
Mm-hmm. And when, is it... not, and also why, necessarily.
Yeah, exactly.
What does he want?
What is the point of kidnapping Monica? Mm-hmm. I really don't know yet. So,
she does have
some information that if it got to Holden, well, not necessarily Holden. Holden, obviously, we know if it got to Holden very bad, he gets triggered very easily by the protomolecule. But if that information gets to Fred, like, that's very bad because Fred is in on this. Factions stuff, as Holden found out in episode one. Like, he thought he didn't know that Fred knew about it until Monica told him. So clearly somebody knows that Monica knows, and they don't want this information to get to Fred. Now Holden gets it, so obviously the information is going to get to Fred, because Holden can't go 1 minute without telling somebody something about the protomolecule. He can't go a minute.
Yeah, is it because she's investigating the protomolecule? Is it because she's investigating something else? We just don't know yet.
Mm-hmm. All we know is that there's something rotten in the state of Tycho.
Oh, I like that.
Mm-hmm. Hamlet's my favorite Shakespearean play, and that should surprise no one. Mm.
So, if we take a step back just for a second, we have... corruption in Tycho, like, it might not be as bad as it is on Mars. We know there's a lot of corruption there. Mm. And Earth, we know the rocks are coming. Mm-hmm. It just lends you to believe that there might be something going on there as well.
Yeah. Like, you have all these interconnecting threads. You have... Seems like someone on Mars is selling weapons and technology to the Belters. You know the Belters are throwing rocks at Earth. Now you have Tycho. As far as we know, the Belt is the only faction with active protomolecule technology, right? That's undeniable. Yep. That's why Holden's so angry.
Yep.
And if you think about it, all these power centers are what are being threatened. Higher-ups in the Martian military are giving technology to radical Belter factions. Radical Belter factions are possibly using that technology, as we'll get to later on in the episode, are possibly using that technology to attack Earth, the breadbasket of the solar system. Like, Ganymede is also considered the breadbasket of the Belt, but Earth is still the breadbasket of the solar system, the center, one of the centers of economy, one of the centers of government. So they're attacking that. There's only one place I can think of in the Belt that has any kind of significance that could also be something that is under stress or attack, like Mars and Earth. And that's Tycho, because the head of one of the main factions of the OPA, one of the legitimate factions of the OPA, where they are currently building OPA warships, is Tycho and Fred Johnson.
Yeah.
So, of course, something shady's got to be happening there, too.
Yep.
Because something shady already happened on Ceres, and that's the other big power center of the Belt, because that's where the government mainly was. And that's where Dawes, the other part of Fred's faction, worked. And that's where the lab was. So something clearly has to be going on Tycho. And we don't necessarily know what that is yet. We don't know why. And we don't know who the target is. But it seems like Monica is getting targeted because of who she's trying to go to. Because if that information can't get to Holden and can't get to Fred... She's not an issue, but she's talking to these powerful people in this power center. She is a threat, but a threat to what?
Yeah.
It's giving me a lot of vibes of season one and two with the stealth ships and what's going on there. It also gives me a lot of vibes of another movie. I'm not sure if you've ever seen it, but it's called The Sum of All Fears, mm-hmm. where a small German Nazi faction is trying to make the United States and Russia
Isn't
go to war against each other.
What's his name? Jack Ryan?
Yep.
Yeah, okay, I do know it. Yes, continue. Yeah.
Excellent book. So the small faction, terrorists, basically, are trying to get the United States and Russia to fight. So you don't fight the two superpowers, get them to fight each other.
Exactly.
So it seems like that's what they're trying to set up here.
Mm-hmm. Lots of intrigue on Tycho. Also, I mean, one fun thing. Like I said, Holden's kind of a Karen. There's a bit where Holden's doing his whole, blah, blah, the security on Tycho is horrible, blah, blah. And you hear Fred do, like, this deep, like, when he goes into his tirade again. And also, while right when Holden and Bull come in for that scene, that's Fred is actually listening to Ashford's broadcast, which I thought was interesting. But I want to get your guys' opinion on this, because I was talking about it in one of my Discord servers with my friends. And I definitely want your perspective on this, because it's been a while since I reread Abaddon's Gate. But when did Bull become such a space racist? Was that a thing? Am I crazy? Like, I remember him being a little like side-eye of like the Ashford situation, because Ashford was a Belter, and like it was the more political thing to make Ashford the leader of the Behemoth, because the Belters wouldn't rise up against another Belter, but if they put an Earther in charge, it'd be a whole issue, even though Bull was more qualified. But I don't remember him being so aggressively racist. And it continues into episode 3 when he's like insulting Sakai where he's like, with you people, you have two speeds, either it's slow or stop. And like, he was throwing around slurs, like the Belter slurs in earlier episodes. Like, what is with this bull? I like him, but what is with him?
So, yeah, this is a really strong deviation from the book for his character trait. This is, I think, something without just spoiling. Without spoiling anything. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
They're just trying to add a little bit more spice for the TV show.
Mm.
Have that character interaction. Don't have it as neat and tidy.
Mm-hmm.
As they can have it in the book, because they give you a lot more exposition behind the scenes. So it just makes you want to hate this guy a little bit more. Yeah. And I think that feeling is going to work out. It's kind of like what they did with Ashford at first, and then how his story progressed.
I don't hate him. I think he's funny.
Yeah, I don't hate him. I almost think watching that scene with Holden, Bull, and Sakai, I almost wondered if he was meant to be like a foil to Holden, who is more respectful of everyone and kind, especially because he has a Belter girlfriend. Because there's a moment when Bull says that you have two speeds, either slow or stop, about the Rocinante, because they're talking about the Rocinante. And you see Holden kind of like immediately just kind of go, the Rossi can wait. It's not a priority. And then he turns back to her and he's a little more gentle. And like, I'm wondering if it's meant to be like, you know, we had Sakai calling Alex a duster in the first episode. And we like, I guess to show the tension between the factions before this big blow up or whatever, like if he's meant to be that kind of a foil. I don't know. It just, it seems like such a deviation. We were everyone's trying to figure out if that was something we remembered from the book, and none of us remember Bull being like that.
No,
so.
I don't remember him being as outwardly aggressive towards the Belters.
Yeah.
But I think it does add to that tension, to that, like, not everybody's going to be a Belter lover. Not everybody's going to be a Martian lover. There is still that tension. And even though our core group has looked past those Belter, Martian, and Earther pieces, not everybody is in the same boat.
I did also forget I forgot two examples in that. I shouldn't have just mentioned Sakai. I forgot Coral tells Naomi to go back to her Earthers. Or her inners, sorry. And there was another scene that I was just thinking of. Naomi explaining to Holden why he can't come with her. Like, I think they're just trying to emphasize the tensions going into this big conflict, which I get, but it's like, Bull, my gosh, you're saying the quiet part out loud. Not that the quiet part's okay either.
Yeah, it is. I want to say it's racism, but it's not racism. It's different. It's
just prejudice, it seems like.
It's prejudice against the different origins. Yeah. Like, everyone's from Earth, obviously, but somebody who grows up in the Belt is going to have a different opinion of the Earthers, people from Earth, because of the way that they are looked upon.
Yeah. I guess. Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, and it's the same thing goes for Mars, right?
Yeah.
And the conflict between Earth and Mars probably didn't help anything either.
Right.
When you fight someone, you want to insult them and you want to dominate them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting place that they're in.
Yeah. Without spoiling anything, one of my favorite moments from book 6, one of my favorite conversations from book 6 revolves around this issue between two of our star-crossed lovers talking about this idea of like how each faction perceives another. I don't know if you guys remember that, but I think it's one of the more touching and beautiful conversations in the entire series and leads into the arc of one of those characters for the whole of book 6. So I'm wondering if they're just kind of touching on that a little early to get that in our heads, so that if that conversation happens in season 6, we remember this. So
yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah. We're going to talk about it later. I don't want to spoil nobody. It's a good conversation, though. All right. We spent a lot more time on Tycho than I planned, but I forgot that I wanted to ask you guys about Bull. So let's move on to our other longer storyline. Thankfully, the Luna storyline is very short, so this we're good. So let's talk about Mars for a little bit. Bobby and Alex debate Sauveterre, Bobby's view eventually winning out. Alex meets with Babbage, who attempts to extract information from him for Sauveterre about Illis and the proto-molecule technology. Alex tries to ask a few questions himself about Sauveterre before he and Babbage depart, but she starts to become suspicious. While returning to his room on Mars, Alex is attacked by two people who inject him with a drug and ask why he wants information about Sauveterre. Under the influence of said drug, Alex reveals that he is trying to learn about the weapons trafficking, but Bobby enters the room and overpowers the two attackers before they are able to kill Alex or leave with the information. Alex tells Bobby that Babbage will be leaving the next day on a ship called the Barkeith, and they plan to follow it on the Razorback. I will say, as anger-inducing as Alex's whole thing makes me, I do get a little laugh every time when they lead the woman out in handcuffs and she says bye and he just waves. I don't know why. It just makes me laugh every time. He just gives her a little, like, goodbye wave. It's just the dumbest thing. Anyway, yeah, so the Martian storyline. It's basically a lot of dialogue for the Martian scenes.
No, I think this is setting up, like, the whole idea that there's corruption that has infiltrated the higher ups of Mars. We already know that there's weapons being sold everywhere, and they're chasing how high up the chain this goes. Mm-hmm. Obviously, because of the questions that Alex has against Babbage, he knows too much, mm-hmm. and he needs to be put down, which is where we get Bobby and Alex at this point here. But that fight scene between Bobby and these two people, mm-hmm. what was that?
Yeah.
Like, I think this is probably the weakest part of the whole episode, and I'm sorry to say that, but
it was pretty unchoreographed. Yeah, it was very clunky. I didn't appreciate it. I thought it was just poorly executed.
Yeah. I don't know if there were... if it was like an attempt to do a 1/3 G fight scene that just didn't land right, or I don't know. It just seems like Bobby is such a well-trained military hand-to-hand combat Marine that we would expect this just to be one and done, like just bam, bam, game mm-hmm. over. And it wasn't far off, but it felt a little weird.
Yeah.
Clunky. Yeah.
I do want to mention, just because, like, obviously we have, like, the whole entire Cass situation and stuff. Mm-hmm. I just want to, like, reiterate the fact that, like, filming stopped before allegations came through.
Yeah.
So nothing that was written for Alex, like, would be indicative or related to any said allegations. Mm-hmm. But I will say that, like, this whole entire storyline, trying to get information from the, what's her name?
Babbage.
Yeah.
Babbage, yeah.
I thought it was very interesting, to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
It was very unnerving to see that whole entire interaction just... how desperate Alex seemed. It just felt very out of character for him. But again, he's begging his wife, ex-wife, to be with him again. So I don't know how.
It seemed really out of place for me because, okay, not an episode ago, he is, you know, begging for forgiveness for his wife and wanting to, like, rekindle something. And then all of a sudden he gets a smile from another pretty face and he's all over her. Sure, he might be playing her a little bit for information, but no, there was more to it than that.
Yeah. I mean, if he was playing her, he was doing a very bad job of it. Like, she was playing him like a fiddle.
Oh, yeah.
I literally have in my notes, oh my god, Alex.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, like, just cringy. It was just, it makes him look like extremely desperate. And even that conversation before, before with Bobby, he's like, well, I don't want to ruin things between
yeah,
us.
I don't want to, I don't want her to think like badly of me or whatever he said. Like, are you yeah. serious, bro? Like, I, you know, I had,
Mars is on the line and you're thinking with what's in your pants. Like, that's exactly
yeah,
what I
like,
was thinking.
Yeah, like, what does, your whole, the whole idea was to get to Solitaire. So why are you worried about her liking you? Like,
yeah.
I mean, I guess you could say that he's saying that because if she likes him, he can get more information out of her. But it just seems like a weird thing to say.
Yep.
Yeah, but
super weird.
If you're going to do that, then be like James Bond. Don't yeah. be like...
Don't give up all the information.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Alex. Like, yeah. there's this one line, though, that in retrospect is not great. And it's the line, and again, you know, no one knew that this was going to happen when this script was written. But boy, does it hit real hard. Is when she says to him, the most amazing thing about that story might be your modesty.
Yeah,
because there are a lot of things, like a lot of not accusations that have come out, but stories that have come out because of the accusations are about Cass's complete lack of modesty. So it doesn't, oh boy, did that have a very weird context for a lot of us who know that story watching it. Like very few
it doesn't
things,
age well.
It didn't age well. I mean, I did, there was one bit in there I liked where he called back to one of my favorite scenes of season 4, which was when Elvie asks Holden and Alex how they showed up somewhere so fast. And Alex is like, we're celebrities. And like, yeah. honestly, that was a hilarious moment. And I did enjoy the callback. But the scene was just really uncomfortable. And
it was.
Honestly, maybe I think the only reason why I can laugh at the scene is because Alex is so bad at manipulation. Like, so bad at it. Like, he gives her everything, man.
Yeah.
He gives her everything. He tells her all about the protomolecule. He tells her about the technology and how they made it work. Like, Alex, are you here to play her? For real? Like, and he doesn't
even... Or
the
other way around.
Yeah, and I think what really gets me about it is the fact that Alex went there with the plan to get information out of her, and he realizes only at the end of the date that he never asked her any questions.
Yeah.
Bro. Like,
I just,
she
I don't
played
know. I
him
just...
like a fiddle, man. Embarrassing.
And even if it, like, I'm excited to just see what people think about this. People that mm-hmm. don't really know what happened with Cass. Just because I just find it wasn't written well. I just... Yeah. It makes his character so unlikable.
Yeah.
In the last 3 episodes. Just because of how desperate and how just... It feels like... That's not the Alex that was in season 1, 2, and 3, the one mm-hmm. that is, or and even 4, the one that's willing to fight for Mars. This Alex just screwed everybody over.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just weird.
Like, and with little
thought.
He
can't be left alone.
Right, and with little thought about his new family, because in the book, and this isn't a spoiler, it's not actually important. In the book, Holden notes that the only person messaging him the entire time before everything goes to shit is Alex.
Yeah.
Alex is still contacting Holden, just like checking in, letting him know where he is, things like that. Like, it... I understand that Alex is trying to help Bobby and Bobby is his focus right now, and I'm glad because it's upsetting that Bobby is on her own in this and he's still basically like mocking her for being suspicious of people. Like, first of all, Alex, you're new to this investigation, hun. She's been doing this for so long. And he discounted her in the last episode. He discounts her again in this episode when she says that she thinks Solitaire is selling tech to the Belters. And he says, You of all people, Bobby, accusing a fellow Martian of treason without any proof. Shut up.
Yeah.
It's clearly a different situation. She's been investigating for months. You just showed up and got invited to the investigation. You really have no right to judge what she's found when you don't even know half of it.
Alex is basing his words off of... He's going on that assumption based on the Mars that he knows from years ago, before the gates opened, before he even retired. So he is prejudiced. That's the word I was looking for. So Bobby has been in this. She's been in the trenches. She knows how corrupted the system has become.
Right.
Alex has refused to believe it, and he's finally starting to see the cracks.
Yeah. And it just, I don't like that he compares the situation that they find themselves in to Bobby's situation, because Bobby's situation was completely different back in seasons 2 and 3. Bobby's whole thing was completely different. She saw something she shouldn't have, and Mars, a corrupt part of Mars, similar to the one she is currently investigating, painted her as a bad guy. So, yeah, I believe that she is kind of the exact person to do this.
Yep.
Oh, I agree. Because she's been this person because of the same corruption. It's not just she's been this person, which is what he's getting at. He's forgetting that she's been this person because of Martian corruption. The same corruption, like this same corruption that she's investigating right now is the corruption that got her in trouble before. So it's very ignorant of him to judge her by only part of her situation. Like, to completely ignore the corruption that got her in trouble the first time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's, I don't know what his deal is. I don't know why he's written so inconsistently. Like, I really appreciate Fred's point of view. But what about all the other stuff, you know?
Yeah, I think that this is, like, one of the most frustrating storylines for me, because it's not the Alex that we grow and care about in the last, the other seasons.
Yeah. Or in the books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just mind-boggling to me. Just don't get it. And I don't think it has anything to do with my personal feelings outside the show. Because I've talked at length that I can separate Cass and Alex, right?
I absolutely
can do that. They're not the same person. Mm-hmm. They have the same face. They're not the same person. But my God, like, something about Alex this season is just really annoying me. And I don't know. I don't get it. I don't get why. Like, I guess, but I still don't get it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, we'll see where it goes. I did think the bar was cool, and I liked the window. And I loved that shot of the balcony. Like, when the camera pans down and you see all of the balconies when Alex is standing alone. The carpet in his hotel, which is a very familiar carpet to movie lovers, because it looks like the carpet from The Shining.
I was just going to say, it's from The Shining, isn't it?
It's the carpet from The Shining. It's the only carpet we ever talk about except for the Dragon Con carpet. and then there is one line from Babbage that I want to put into everyone's heads now. So at the end of their date, before they separate, Alex says to Babbage, I'm sure to play along, but still, it's a weird thing to say for someone who never plans to be on Mars again. Alex says to Babbage, maybe we can do it again when you get back, like the date. And Babbage kind of pauses for a second and goes, that would be interesting. It's just makes you wonder, what does she mean by that? What is she planning? What are they up to out there? And why would it be interesting if she came back to go on a date with him? I mean, maybe she's talking about the fact that Alex doesn't live on Mars and would probably not be there when they get back because of how long it takes to travel in space. But I don't know, just the way she delivered it, I just think it's something that we're probably going to want to hang on to.
No, I agree. I think Alex is going to ship off of Mars very soon, and he's probably never going to come back after what's happened.
Yeah.
And then she's shipping out the next day, and she knows she's probably not coming back either.
Yep.
But it's interesting because Fred said that, like, that last kiss that she gives Alex, it's kind of just like, how do you describe it?
It's a very last kiss kind of kiss.
No, it was more of like she's like, she still has him wrapped around her finger if she ever meets him again.
Yeah. My last stray observation is when they're leaving the hotel room and Alex is like, all right, let's head down to the Razorback. And Bobby says, well, I'll meet you there. I want to go grab a few things just in case. He says, okay. It's like, I wonder what she's grabbing.
Mm-hmm. Her rifle.
Yeah, all her guns. All those things that she
bought. Of them.
All the things she bought in the black market. All right. I think we've kind of gotten all our feelings out about Mars. I yelled enough. So let's move on to the final storyline. What some may call a very critical, maybe most important storyline of this episode, even though you might never know because there's only two scenes.
Yeah.
Let's go to Luna. Avasarala and Delgado meet with a scientist who notices that the readings are higher on one side of the broken rocks, that they could be possibly from the same rock, one coated in stealth tech, which is something Bobby feared. Avasarala tasks Delgado with getting the UN to use the watchtowers to spot any more rocks. Later, Delgado tells her they've been shut out, and he won't help her anymore as it's a risk to his career. Avasarala leaves Arjun a message that ends with her explaining that she can't leave her work yet. As she prepares to leave her office, she receives a message from Fred containing Ashford's final recording and confirming her fears. Just as a rock falls off the coast of Africa.
What a powerful
way to end that third episode.
Yeah.
Everybody was probably screaming like banshees. Now we have to wait a week?
Yeah, exactly. We have to wait a week.
Avasarala knew, absolutely knew, that this was stealth tech covering the rocks. She didn't want to believe it. And her biggest issue is she doesn't have proof to go after it. Not enough proof to take it to Gao and say, here's the smoking gun. They have a 53% possible match on a belter ship that could be one of Marco's. So they just don't have enough. If they could have investigated that rock or the stealth tech, if they had the time to do that, yeah, maybe they could have proved it was Martian. They could have proved it was stolen, but they just didn't have the time.
No, they weren't given the time.
So she knew what Earth was in for the second that they figured that out.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously that was the cliffhanger.
It made me kind of sad to see her leaving that message for Arjun because it kind of, first of all, she's leaving a message for him. She's not talking to him.
Mm-hmm.
And second of all, she says, like, I hope we can talk again soon, which kind of implies that they have not been talking. Yeah. And I mean, Ashanti kind of confirmed that in the last episode that they haven't reconciled after their fight. That Avasarala kind of went to Luna to do the job that she was assigned, even though she hated it because she's too proud to swallow anything else. And so they've implied that, you know, they're not talking. And it's just really sad to hear her admit to Arjun, like, yes, you raised our child because I was always working. And I want to come. I want to see you. And I want to talk to you about how things are going. But my job is so important and there's still work to do and I can't leave it. And she's hiding behind her work. Like, absolutely 100%. Avasarala is hiding behind her work. She was before the Marco thing. She, you know, she always hides behind her work, but it's just really sad to kind of hear it put so plainly because she does mean it. It's not that she doesn't mean it, but she very clearly is using it to put a kind of a safety thing between her and Arjun to protect herself. I don't know, but it's just sad. It's really sad.
Yeah.
Her work though is so important. Mm-hmm. No one else knows it's stealth tech.
Yeah.
No one else knows that these have been weaponized rocks.
Well, he doesn't know. He thinks she's talking about her actual job. her actual assignment of helping to decide who goes through the rings.
Yep.
And she means this, what you're saying, Fred. That's what, like, it's so bonkers that he doesn't even know what work she means.
And he can't know, and that's part of the problem. And that's what a lot of politicians, a lot of Secret Service, a lot of military people have to go through, is they can't tell their spouses what's going on.
Right. And it's just really sad. There was something else. Oh, just a little fun fact. I do want to talk about all the heavy stuff and the science scene, which I thought was very fun. But I do want to say, first of all, Fish Finder 5000, when? When will we all have Fish Finder 5000s? And B, what's really interesting, and I want people to look back now, because I've been waiting to talk about this on the show ever since I finally saw episode 3. In the trailer, we see that shot of the man looking out into the ocean. In the trailer, though, he's watching a rock fall. In the episode, he is watching the impact. And I don't like that trickery, Expanse. I saw that. You tried to The Last of Us Part 2 us. You tried to The Last of Us Part 2 us, and I will not stand for it. Yeah. No, I will stand. I love this show. But it's just so funny, like, watching that trailer back. Because I remember the first time I watched it, I was like, hang on. I was like, you know that Leonardo DiCaprio from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood meme? Where he's, like, sitting there with his glass of whiskey going like this?
Yeah.
That's what I was doing watching that scene. It's just, also, that was... that shot was a lot.
So the difference between the trailer and what actually happened in the show is probably best explained by, like, different people make the trailer than the different people make the show. Mm-hmm. So they probably took both and said, well, let's go with that one. And
why do you have to discount my theory that it's trickery?
They did it only to trick you, Shannon.
Well, here's the thing, though, because you don't see him look up until we see the impact. That's why I think it's interesting. Because we don't see that at all. We don't see him see the rock until it's, like, way too late.
Yeah, but they probably reshot it or, like, said, oh, this doesn't seem right. Let's change it.
He wants to discount my theory. That I have been boondoggled by another company. So, Naughty Dog.
In that example... he wasn't using the Fish Finder 5000. He was using the Meteor Finder 2. Wow.
Just number 2. That's well, how far back our technology is in that front.
That's right.
Yeah. I really like... First of all, I forgot to put in the notes, but that joke. Delgado starts a joke when they're in the bar waiting for the scientist. And we never hear the end of the joke. I didn't write the joke down. But everyone's
an Earther, a Martian, and a Belter so walk into a bar.
Yeah. Like, they're all ordering the drinks of their enemies. And so, you know, everyone wants to know if we'll hear the end of the joke. I want to know if we're going to hear the end of the joke. Ah, the end of the joke. So I really like that scene, though, when they brought the scientist in and he's wearing, like, an actual watch. And he's like, oh, I like, you know, machines. I like, I forget the word he actually says. But, you know, he's like, why don't you talk to your scientists about this? Don't you have scientists? They don't want to tell him that they're not allowed to talk to their scientists without Gal finding out. So he's like, oh, we just want a second opinion in the private sector.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a really interesting scene that I find you get a wealth of information out of it for such a little scene. And then you don't see them again until... disaster strikes. There's only two scenes on Luna, but boy, are they hefty scenes.
This entire episode was heavy.
Yeah. It's a lot. There's a lot in this episode.
It's dark. Like, just from everything that Naomi and Drummer went through and the issues on Tycho and Monica and ending with, you know, a rock falling on Earth and probably killing millions.
Yeah.
It's a lot. And yet there is still...
And Ava Sorrell is screaming at the top of her lungs, like, look at this, and
told
nobody...
Told you so, but obviously nobody, it's the worst yeah. told you so in history.
Yeah, you don't no want to be kidding. The one to say told you so on that one.
No. So, what do we think of the episode as a whole? Obviously, Fred just kind of gave his opinion. Andrew, how do you feel about the episode?
It's a whirlwind of emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So, if I take a look back at the DeWalt crew, I mean, yep. that was emotional.
Yep.
Palace Station, that was emotional.
Yeah.
Tycho Station, it wasn't emotional, but there is deception.
Yeah.
Something's rotten in the state of Denmark is like the perfect way to describe it.
Yeah.
Mars is also something's rotten in the state of Denmark.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Luna, which is emotional. It's like you are either looking back so you don't get stabbed in the back,
mm-hmm.
or you're suffering in this yeah. episode. And I think it's just beautiful that, like, it makes you feel a lot of emotions. And at the end of it, when the rock falls,
mm-hmm.
you know it's too late.
Yeah.
Whatever they were trying to figure out, it's too late.
Yeah. It's a lot. Slightly longer yep. episode, kind of got away with us, but we had a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
This episode had a lot in it. So I think it's well worth the time we put into this episode, I think.
It's funny, because sometimes we're like, oh, this episode's going to be short, and then it ends up being, like, 2 hours
long. This one, yeah, this one I was thinking might be a little longer, but we really did go off. Mm-hmm. I like it, though. Lots of good discussions tonight.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, very excited to get this episode out, hopefully very, 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 very soon, because we have 2 episodes to get out by the end of the week.
Now let's hope there's a happier episode to come.
Fred, this is the
expanse.
Yeah, no.
We're not going to be happy till the finale, and maybe not even then.
Can't just Amos just beat someone up?
I'm sure he will.
Yeah.
That's like a normal day for him.
Perfect.
Holden's going to go be sad somewhere. Normal day for him.
Go drink some coffee.
Yeah, drink some coffee and be sad somewhere else.
All right, well, let's get to episode 4.
Yeah.
All right. So, if you enjoyed this episode, if it made you cry, if it made you mad, if it made you feel like your world
dancing.
In 2020 was worse than what the Earth and the Expanse had to deal with, let us know. You can email us at typebeam@randomchatter.com. Leave us a review. Let us know exactly what your thoughts were. And if we missed something, let us know too, because we like to take a look at our emails and write back. You can also follow us on Twitter at the Tight Beam, at Random Chatter. You can find me on Twitter at KatzBears. That's KatzBears. Fred, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Freddy1Kenobi. That's FreddyWon Kenobi.
You can also find Shannon at what?
You can find me almost anywhere at ShankBeezy.
You can also find us on Instagram at Random Chatter and also randomchatter.com, where we don't just talk about the Expanse. We have other shows that tackle the MCU, DC, superheroes, and more. And also Cobra Kai, which Shannon is part of.
Literally just recorded right before this.
Dedication.
Speaking of dedication, why don't you help us spread the word? We'd really love it if you'd leave some reviews. Reviews are kind of how people decide if they want to listen to our show. They also kind of help us decide figure out how we can improve or what we're doing well. So please, please leave us a review on your podcast platform of choice, which I'm hoping will include Spotify very soon. I know I say that every week, but I'm still open. Even if you don't want to leave us a review, if you could just leave us a rating, that would also be so incredibly helpful. To get us a little higher noticed on different podcast platforms. You can also help us out by sharing us on social media. I'm over on the Twitter retweeting like Expanse stuff all the time, trying to reply to different tweets we get on Twitter sent to us, and also posting our episodes. I'd really appreciate it if at any time, if we post an episode or share something about the show, if you could just give it a retweet, spread it out, get it to more Expanse fans. We could use all the help we can get in getting the show out to more ears, as well as just getting some information about the show out to more people. And Twitter is the fastest way to do that. Obviously, I will also, after tonight's episode, be posting all three episodes on the subreddit all together, all at once. And then after that, I will be releasing them once a week. So, when you see that, please, by all means, leave us some information and feelings in the replies. We'd love to hear from any of the listeners on any platform, because then we have more to talk about. You can also just tell your friends about us. If you have friends who like podcasts, if you have friends who like people screaming and making shrieky sounds when something cute happens or something like that, this is the show for you, and this might be the show for your friends. So just let them know we exist, that we talk about the show. If they like podcasts, just help us get to more ears. We'd really appreciate any help you could give us.
If you really like what you hear on the show here and you want to interact with us directly, we'd really appreciate it and would love to. You can join us on our Discord server at randomchatter.com/discord. It's completely free. We have a show channel open for every one of the podcast shows that we have. And so jump on over there and feel free to chat with us at any time. If you do want to open up the entire Discord server and become a member of the Random Chatter Network, you can go to randomchatter.com/Patreon, and for as little as $1 a month, you can become a full member. All the proceeds go to getting our servers running and all the storage and all that kind of fun stuff. If Patreon and Discord's not your thing and you still want to support us, head on over to randomchatter.com/store, and that'll redirect you to our TeePublic store. And there's lots of cool merch there as well. All the music that you hear in this episode is Ursa Minor by Cell Dweller and Acilia's Ascent and Sounds. All trademarks are owned by the respective owners.
Watch The Expanse now. The Mandalorian's over.
Watch them all twice.
This is the way.
This is the way. So say we all.